Welcome to the Smart Brand Marketing Podcast with your host, Tom the Digital Architect Liebelt. Are you tired of spending money on marketing efforts that produce little or no results? Unable to decide whether internet marketing is right for your business? Want to take your brand to the next level but are unsure of what steps to take next? Hey, you're not alone. Join thousands of others in their pursuit of growing a profitable business and learning actionable strategies on how they can outperform brands that are older, bigger, and stronger.
Welcome back, listener. It's a new episode. I have the creative genius behind WedShaveClub.com on today, and he was able to take his business from $300 a month to over $40,000 or $50,000 a month, which is insane. And he did it in less than 6 months. So that will be great. Before that, I want to give an update. I've been getting a lot of messages about when the documentary is going to be coming out. And I kind of dropped the ball here because I didn't even show the trailer or give a link to the trailer. So first things first, the documentary will be out this year in November. I'm not sure about the exact date yet, but it will be out sometime during that month. The link to the extended trailer, I'm going to give it now. It's yourownwayout.com/Tom. Once again, that's yourownwayout.com/Tom. On that page, you will also find an offer for a mastermind service that will be rolled out at the same time as when the documentary is released. At the moment, we're in the testing phase, and I thought it'd be great if I could get some listeners in at a discounted price and give me some feedback on whether the thing is running properly or not. The offer is only good for 10 people. It will end on August 31st. So if you're listening to this afterwards, you'll probably have to wait until the actual offer is rolled out. Price will be increased at that point. So if you do want to lock it in and you think that masterminds would be something that could help you in your business, then please join. They have been really helpful in mine. When the mastermind runs well, it's amazing. When it does not, it's disappointing. But that's life in general. So I want to do my best to systemize it in a way where we get only quality people in, where we can rotate the people in and out so that your network grows exponentially. And people that don't show up will be kicked out from the entire membership. Not just the mastermind, the entire membership. I want to make sure to keep the quality high. On a different note, I seen a new review. Vernon, you're the man. Thank you. Now it's time for the interview. Enjoy.
Hi, Tom.
Hey, what's up, Rowan?
Good, how are you, man?
Doing good, just fixing up my internet connection. It's insane because my phone is working better here than my regular internet.
Really?
I'm in Europe and I don't know why, but they still have the DSL type internet and it just disconnects every 3 minutes sometimes. It's so annoying. But then the hotspot from the phone is so good and I've been surviving off of that.
That is crazy, man.
That is crazy, right? Like you would think they're a little more advanced.
What country are you in?
I'm in Poland right now, but you would think Germany was better and it was the same.
That is crazy, man. You're going to have to head to Japan.
In Japan, the regular internet works just fine.
Okay.
Maybe in 10 years, we can really run our businesses smoothly from anywhere in the world. But right now, it's still not there. Where are you at?
I'm in Tampa, Florida.
Tampa, Florida. I used to live in Orlando, Winter Park. Yeah.
Yeah, man, I like it over here.
What do you like about Tampa?
So I was living in D.C. before, and I actually just came down here for vacation like 2 years ago. And it was just like peaceful, nice weather, like people are really friendly. Just like a good vibe, man. So I ended up staying.
That's cool. When I used to live in Orlando, they used to say that Tampa was the porn capital of the country.
It's probably true.
It used to be, because that's where the Girls Gone Wild stuff used to come out of.
Ah, I didn't know that. Okay. And I know that there is, like, one of the leading strip club places, too. Like, the most number of strip clubs per capita or something like that.
Yeah, they had that in Fort Lauderdale. I remember when I drove out there, they had maps. And the maps had nothing but the strip club locations.
That is hilarious, man. Good old Florida, man. I love it.
So let's get into it, because, I mean, I see that little Skype message you have. It's $500 a call, so I don't want to waste your time here.
I actually have that on there because a lot of people, after I made those posts on Reddit and Facebook and so on, I've been doing some case studies, and a lot of people would just message me in the middle of the night, like, or just message me, or not message, call me, I'm sorry. Well, just call me. So I'm like, you know, I'm happy to chat and answer questions or whatever. But I would literally get phone calls in the middle of the night from folks. So I had to be like, no, I can't do phone calls. Like, you know, send me a text or Skype me. I'll answer your questions. But that's why I did that. So to kind of deter people.
Maybe you're too much of a nice guy because people usually don't call me. And if they do and I'm not in the mood, they don't call again. Obviously, the stuff that you want to share with people, you shared already. It's not like you said, okay, I'm sharing this case study and call me anytime you feel like if you want to know anything else.
Yeah.
It's not like you said that, right? I mean, did you say that?
No, exactly. It's not like I said that. Everything is, I try to make it as transparent as possible. So everything that you need is there. But folks are like, can I pick your brain for a little bit more? And then
that's the most disturbing thing ever, right? When a person says, can I pick your brain? Because I get the visual.
That is hilarious. Yeah, man. You can't do it. If I were to say yes to everybody, I wouldn't have a single minute of time.
They go from picking your brain to the coffee and tea date, right? It's like,
yeah.
Like you mind just sitting down with me for 5 minutes? It's not going to be 5 minutes.
Yeah, exactly.
I got to travel to that place and you're not going to let me go in 5 minutes. It's going to be 10 minutes to order that tea and coffee. Then you're gonna ask me to small talk with you for a few minutes because, you know, you want to kind of get in the groove a little bit. Then you're going to ask me 10 minutes. It's 2 hours of my day.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
That's what happens. That's a lesson that people post case studies online. That's what's going to happen to
you. Yo, I'm glad that you feel my pain, so it sounds like you've been there as well.
I've been there. And why did you post the case study in the first place? Like, why did you want to share the success?
For me, a couple of reasons. Like, one of the reasons has to do with me feeling that there's like a lack of really detailed posts on how to do things. As I'm like trying to learn internet marketing, say like 4 or 5 years ago, I would come across these blog articles and in the title, they would kind of make you feel like they're about to explain something. But by the end of the article is just like all fluff. And that kind of annoys me. So I kind of felt like, you know, since I've figured some things out, I would actually make some posts about it, but do it in a very, very detailed way. So it wouldn't be that type of fluffy thing that I encountered as I was trying to figure things out myself. That's one thing. And then the other thing, I think now we are at a point where transparency in its own right is marketed. People are drawn to transparency and they share it. And so since we're, you know, we start businesses without any funding, everything is bootstrapped, it's almost the way of generating a bit of PR without having a PR company. So that's kind of like the two reasons why we posted that case study and we continue to post case studies about stuff that we're working on.
Yeah, I agree. The quickest way to get views on your website is to start doing income reports.
Yeah.
It is. I mean, whether that's a good or bad thing, you know, there's different opinions. I don't like that route. I don't think it's a good thing. But yeah, other transparency, I think it's really good. But your business is subscriptions of wedge shapers?
Yes. Wedge shaping products, yeah. Mm-hmm.
You posting this how-to case study for internet marketers, I am not seeing how that's going to help your main business.
I'll tell you how it has already helped. It was shared so many times, that case study, that we have gotten subscribers from that. People, like we had the New York Times bestseller guy, Ramit Sethi, shared a case study and like so much traffic that we got from that. That post was like, it's still the number 3 top post on Our Entrepreneur, and it's been like a year later. So we get traffic from that like daily still. So we've gotten subscribers from it and that's like the easy number. But then we've gotten all these things on the margins. Like we've gotten contacted by VC folks that were interested in talking to us, startup incubators on the West Coast. One of our hires came from there. We met a guy that did some product for us. So we got some specially branded for us products done from a guy that found us from that case study. We improved our razor by finding another guy that found us through that case study. So it's like we were able to get the word out so much about our business to not only subscribers, but to people that ended up helping us in a variety of different ways. So yeah, it's kind of like a long-term play because even now we still get traffic from that case study and it's been probably 1 year now.
Was that intentional, or did you just feel like, I'm going to put this out and see what happens?
I felt like I would put it out and see what happens, but I had been posted on Our Entrepreneur for some time about other stuff that we've done. And I've always seen that there have been these benefits on the margins from doing it. And so I kind of knew that if we did a really good one, that we would get those benefits. So it was kind of like intentional in that way because I had experienced it before. But then also, you know, it's also kind of fun to post on Our Entrepreneur because it's one of my favorite places to hang out as far as business goes.
Tell me a little bit about your experience, because I heard the interview with Brent.
Yeah.
Shout out to Brent, by the way. And he asked you about the same thing, and you said you used to be an accountant. Well, you're too smart for an accountant. I've had accountants before. Like, come on. You're talking about copy here. You're talking about conversions and other things and long plays with content. That's not what an accountant does. I just want to know, what type of skills did you have before we talk about that business that you've developed, and how did you get those skills?
First off, thank you, man. I appreciate that. So yeah, I had been an accountant for 10 years, but about year number 6 or so, I was like, man, this stuff sucks. Actually, I said that even before year number 6. But at year number 6, it sucked so much that I started looking at the internet as a way to maybe escape from having a corporate job and a boring corporate job. So I started reading everything I could find. I would hang out on like Shoe Money blog. I don't know if you know who that is.
Oh, man. Shoe Money. But yeah, let's not mention Shoe Money.
Well, hey, that's one of the places where...
I'm kidding, but it's just, you know, it's... I think I seen a video when he did like a conference maybe 10 years ago, and he had these weird wannabe rappers on stage, and that's when I turned my... I went in a different direction. I was like, I want nothing to do with this dude.
Dude, I feel you. And what you described sounds exactly like Shoe Money. I wouldn't be surprised. But that was one of the places I start kind of like reading some articles. There was this thing that kind of taught me how to put together websites. It's called SiteSell. And I started building little websites and little projects, like a little travel website, a little blog. And piece by piece, as I was doing these other little things that really didn't cost me money, but I started to figure out, okay, this is where I should go to learn about conversions and where I should go to learn about copywriting and branding and driving traffic and SEO. So I started picking up these little skills, like piece by piece. And then I started saying, okay, how can I make some money? And I was an eBay affiliate, an Amazon affiliate. You know, it's kind of like that little process of learning how to drive traffic and make that person take out their credit card and feel comfortable enough to do business with you. And I did that multiple times over these, you know, earning a little $100 a month or whatever, you know, that whole thing. And then I got better and better and better. And it led to a local service business, which is still going, Maids in Black. And then I was on Reddit and I saw this guy was selling Wet Shave Club. And I felt, you know, with all my skill sets so far, I could probably do something good with it. And it led to making it work.
Yeah, I'm a little curious about that. So you see this website being sold on Reddit.
Yeah.
This guy says he's not making much money with it. So obviously you've seen something that he hasn't. So I'm curious what that was. And then also, what criteria did you have when you thought, oh, okay, I'm going to buy a business from someone? Like, what's the selection process like for you?
This guy, at the time he was doing a little less than $400 per month. And he was doing it with a very, very poor branding. Like the brand was off. So that was the one thing that struck me. Okay, if you can get to, you're up to like 55 subscribers or something, and you're able to do that with such a poor presentation in both the website and in the product, not to knock on him or anything about, you know, like that. For him, it was more like an MVP, and he was, you know, trying to figure it out. So I felt like, okay, we could rebrand this completely, improve the product line completely, and any traction he's getting right now, so say his conversion rate is, I don't know, say 0.5%, we can probably double, triple, or quadruple that with better product and better branding, and then go after some, you know, really building some traffic. So that was kind of the thing that struck me. Like, at his level, with a very poor presentation that I knew I could improve upon, there's a chance for this to be a good business. And then the second thing was the fact that Dollar Shave Club had already educated people about this shave-in subscription thing, and we were a slightly different niche of that, and they made it work. I felt we could make it work as well. And those were the two things that made me say, okay, let's do it. And I bought it that same weekend.
That's interesting. When you talk about the conversions and doing that, I can hear the accountant in you. So that makes sense to me. Then when you talk about, okay, I've seen this brand, I know how I can improve it. That is not an easy thing for someone to say. And obviously, you know, people can publish anything on Amazon, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, have you seen the covers for a lot of those books?
Have I seen the covers? Oh, yeah.
So a lot of people can look at something and they think it's a good idea, right? So, you know, they might have looked at that same site and said, well, I don't see anything wrong with it. Looks like a good brand. Like, yeah. Where did that skill come from? How did you think that you can improve on that brand? I don't think that's a simple thing to do and to say for most people.
I agree with you, actually, because this is something that I find is, I'll backtrack a little bit and say, like, one of the things that I've found as I'm like, you know, I've been kind of like mentoring some people and so on over the last few years is the whole concept of MVP, like you know, your minimal viable product and let's launch and get it out the gate. What that has done has made people think of launching ugly, right? So let's just launch ugly and see what happens.
Yeah.
That has been something that has hurt a lot of people. And because in my eyes, and kind of where I got this from, what I've realized as I've started to build these little businesses and build these little blogs that I was telling you about, if you brand really, really, really well, all things else being equal, you set yourself up to at least do well or at least not be hurt based on your brand. And this is something I kind of figured out in the beginning. Like the internet is a visual medium first. And like your copy has to be very good as well, but it's visual first. And people, they like pretty things. This is something I kind of like figured this out near the beginning, even when I was not making money, that you have to make the thing visually appealing and make it connect on an emotional level in some way. And you have a chance of doing well.
Through all the coaching that you've done, can you give a couple examples of the mistakes that people make when trying to brand online and the good things that people have done from just, you know, like the sample size that you've seen?
I think what people do in a lot of cases is they kind of like brand down. So like, for example, I've helped some people that, you know, have been building like local sites, like say like local maid service sites or local lawn care service, you know, like very simple companies. And what they will do is create a lawn care website that looks like other lawn care websites. This is the space. These are my competitors. And I am just another one of those competitors. So I look kind of like them and we're all going to struggle together. For me, I try to brand out of the competition, like brand up to another level. So I will find some way of saying, okay, I won't call this Tampa Lawn Care Services. I would call it like Lawn Tribe and make it something that like we are like these cool people. We're in a startup space and we're delivering this quality product using technology. So you know what I mean? I try to like brand to another level higher outside of the competition. So that's one thing. And then another thing I find that people do is they use what I call like corporate speak. So instead of saying I have, like, I'm going to provide a home cleaning service that is safe for your family and pets, they will start to talk about the ingredients of the product and things that people don't connect to on a personal level. So for me, and this is copy right now, but we really try to make our sites seem like it's as casual as possible. We're having a conversation with one person. We're connecting with one person and we connect with having human beings on the homepage. All these little things that we do to connect with one individual. Kind of rambling, but there's a couple little things that are super important that we do each time with every website, regardless of service, regardless of product, that people kind of miss along the way.
I don't think it's rambling because you explained two really important things. The first one is when someone starts to build up a site in a niche, they'll usually look at their only five competitors or six competitors in a space and be like, okay, let me take a piece of this, piece of that, and make something that's pretty much like all of them.
Yeah.
And then you're competing obviously, with those five, because you're starting to look like them, right? So it's like trying to pick up women in a club, and you look at the five guys going, you're like, I want to look just like those five guys. Right? So it's a similar analogy. And then the second one is, and I heard this, I think, from James Altucher. He looked over the top best-selling, I think, 300 or 400 books in history. Mm-hmm. And this is similar with copy. If you're writing on a fifth or sixth or seventh grader level, mm-hmm. That's how you sell.
Yes.
And corporate level is way above that. And I think there are websites that you can actually put your text into and they'll tell you which grade it's on. So
yes,
this is very important stuff that you mentioned. So I'm curious, what else do you got?
So those are the things. And then as far as we're creating the website, we're saying, okay, some person has come to this site and this person has to cross this hurdle. And this hurdle is filled with distrust. It's filled with stress. It's filled with fear. Is filled with all of these little things that we have to conquer in order to get that person to reach into their pocket, pull out their credit card, and punch those numbers into a website that they've never been to before in a lot of cases. So we keep that in mind as we're going. So one, something could be as basic as SSL. Does it have SSL? Okay, that's pretty basic. Does it have smiling faces that people would connect with? That your audience would connect with? Okay, cool. Does it have like some type of banners or something from like industry providers that say, okay, this is a trustworthy site? Okay, cool. Does it somehow communicate to the person that I'm not going to be the first person who's making this purchase on this website? So is there some type of social proof? Are you showing how many Facebook fans you have? Or are you showing past customers being happy with your product or service? Things along those lines. So there's a whole list of things that we go through and we make sure that each website speaks those things and it communicates them on the homepage and it communicates the most important ones above the fold. It's not even anything super sophisticated, but we just make sure we do it every single time.
So it's getting the foundation right. So it's like with Zappos, the customer service is right. And based on that, everything else will be okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Once you do that, then all that's left for you to do is drive as much traffic as you can find.
Let's touch upon that a little bit, because you've built this website from, I think it was, what, $300 a month, you said, to,
yeah.
What is it now? Is it a seven-figure business now per year?
This is the beginning of year two for us. So we did, mm-hmm. In the first year, we did 500K. Month 13, we ended with 500,000.
Okay.
And I think at the end of year two, we could hit that $1 million mark by the end of year two.
Either way, I mean, you moved it from $300 a month to over $40,000 a month within 1 year.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's amazing already. So based on that, how do you pick and test marketing strategies to drive traffic?
Funny enough, our core thing for this is like a spreadsheet that we create each time. And for Wet Shave Club, one of the things that we started out by doing is saying we have to find influencers. So influencers would be these hubs of people. There are a gazillion of them. These are people that are very, very well known online, and they may be well known in the shaving community, or they may just be well known in general, or they may be well known in the subscription box community. How do we find these people, get our products in their hands, and have them write about us, tweet about us, Facebook about us, email about us, something? And that's what we started with. So, and as we're going through reaching out to these people, we're then documenting how much traffic we're getting from them and what that is doing to our conversions and if they're sending us subscribe. So we just have this big spreadsheet where we track this, the influencers, the bloggers, the YouTubers. Then we go after the shaving forums. Then we go after like Facebook marketing, which we, you know, that's easy to track as well. Then we went after building our email list. So like as each of these channels came online, we have a spreadsheet that we keep to kind of see which ones are converting best and which ones we can put more energy into. And that's kind of just how we did it. And that's how we ended up with the four or five that we still do today.
So I think every listener now is waiting for me to find out from you, how did you get those influencers on board? Because they probably wrote down content influencers. How? That's not an easy thing to do.
Yeah. So cool. It's actually kind of non-interesting, but I'll tell you exactly how we do it. For the people that are bloggers, and a lot of our influencers are bloggers, we send them a short email. Hi, my name is Rohan from Wet Shave Club. You're bringing a cool subscription box service to market. We love your website. You got to throw in a little compliment, but there would actually be something that we love about their website, and we would mention it, maybe a previous article that they did, or some type of review that they did, or this was a very great review that you guys did on Harry's, and we're a competitor, and we were, wondering if you'd like to take a look at our box. And if so, we can send you over one and let us know what you think. Kind of like super casual like that. We're not saying, okay, you have to give us a review if we send your box, but let us know what you think. And 90% of the time, people that say yes, they will make a review for you. So those are the bloggers. The YouTubers, we would try to contact them on YouTube, or if they have a Twitter page, we will contact them and pretty much say the same thing. So really then our costs to get these people that have a big following to talk about us is really the cost of one of our boxes, which is kind of fine because then we can drive some acquisition from the posts that they make or the blog posts that they make. Very rarely you will find people asking to be paid. Most people, they just make blog posts because they like reviewing products, or they like talking about subscription box companies and so on. And that's kind of it.
I bet Shumani would want to get paid.
Yeah, Shumani, you probably got to pay like 10K or something.
And wouldn't drive any traffic too. It's a good strategy, and I wanted to that the people to hear it, because I already mentioned on this podcast before that success is boring.
Yeah.
The things that actually will make you successful are the boring parts. It's not the fun and the glamour stuff. It's like sending out these emails, which you've probably sent a lot of them before.
Thousands. We're in the thousands by far, yeah.
That's the key here. It's like, yeah, maybe it's a boring thing, but this is what's bringing the success, and it's doing it over and over and over again because it's working.
Yes.
So what's the end goal with this business? Because, I mean, you're growing it, so are you trying to exit? Are you thinking of systemizing it to a point where you can go to Thailand and disappear and never show up again? Like, what's the plan?
So right now, we kind of don't know. If we can continue growing it and get to that seven-figure point, which is coming very soon, we will do that and just keep going. I have a small team here in Tampa, and, we actually just outsourced the shipping and fulfillment. We were doing all that ourselves out of a warehouse in Tampa. So I think it's going to become more and more of an offhand business where we don't actually have to do the work, and we just can focus on marketing and enjoying that part of the business. Maybe at some point, if some person wants to, make us an offer. We were just talking with some guys on the West Coast with an incubator that were, show some interest in us going through an incubator. I don't know if that's going to happen. But there's some opportunities are here right now and some stuff that may come down the line. But who knows? I'm kind of open to keep working on the business because we enjoy it.
That's cool. Can you mention a little bit more about the shipping and fulfillment? Because you have your own website. You're not only going through Amazon and eBay, am I correct?
Oh, yeah, that's correct. We do almost no Amazon and eBay. We're listed on Amazon for a few products, but I don't think we do even more than $100 a month on there.
How did you outsource it? Do you mind sharing a little bit that process? How did you get that away from yourself, which is probably a really annoying job? And then how did you pick the outsourcer? Like, I'm a little curious about it.
We actually went through, we looked at a couple guys. Matter of fact, those outsourcers have been doing, the guys that offer fulfillment have been doing a good job of doing the boring stuff as well that we were just talking about, because a lot of them have been emailing us. So I'm sure they probably put together their own spreadsheet of potential people that they could work with, and they've been sending emails. So they emailed us, and we looked at a couple different ones based on the cost per box that, that they would charge us. Some of them have special shipping arrangements as well. So some of these outsourcers have been able to negotiate with shippers to say, okay, we're shipping, a million boxes per month. And I know some of them are. And we get special shipping rates. And then those special shipping rates can pass on to us. So we kind of look at the cost first, the cost per box, the cost of shipping. We also looked at their customer service, like would they take returns for us, and will they process reshipping? So things like that too, to make sure that our customer service is still good. And those were kind of the two major things. Oh yeah, and the third thing was if they had systems that integrated with the systems that we use. So we use ShipStation, Indicia, and CreateJoy. And some of these guys, they integrate directly into those platforms. So it's a completely seamless handoff. And those were the three major things that we looked at the most. And we settled with these guys called RevGo. And so far, so good.
Any advice on, for anyone doing a subscription service, on how to keep the clients in and not want to leave? Like, what kind of things do you have in place to keep people coming back and not canceling the subscription?
This is probably the most important question. This is the meat of everything. So subscriptions, box services, and just recurring services in general, it could be SaaS software or whatever else. The number that is most important is how to reduce churn, how to get people to stop leaving.
Yes.
So a couple things. At its core, people are just getting this box every single month. So we try to make the unboxing experience as fun as possible. So inside each box, we have like a little postcard or a little brochure or a little promotional code or a link to a contest or an offer for them to post themselves with the contents of the box on social media and tag us, and they'll get an extra 20% off some products next month. Whatever, we try to make it as engaging as possible each single time they open the box. Another thing we've done is try to build a community around our boxing experience. So we started like a special VIP group on Facebook. Well, we have a Facebook page, which is pretty, you know, we have a lot of Facebook fans as well, but we started like a VIP private Facebook group where our members can join and talk and stay connected. And so kind of like connect around the brand besides just receiving a box every single month. And I think those two things have kind of helped us reduce our churn numbers. And then the third thing, which may seem a little bit counterintuitive, we have to be very, very careful not to pack as much in each month's box. So you want it to be a wonderful experience, of course. But one of the things that we did in the beginning was we would say, okay, we want to pack as much stuff as we can possibly make to make the value like, you know, three times what the customer is spending. And then what that did was the customers would have too much product. And they were actually stockpiling product. And then by the next month, they're like, I have enough soap from last month. I could as well just, you know, cancel. And this was something that we found out by surveying people that cancel, the reasons why. We had pictures, people had like months of boxes like unopened and so on because we sent too much product. So as we like go on throughout the business, we stay connected with our customers, but we also pay special attention to people that are leaving, find out why they're leaving, and make some changes to our experience. There's a lot going on around this part of the business, man. It's tough.
I think it's the most interesting one to me, though. So I just wanted to leave it for the end because I think it's really tough for any subscription business, whether it's a membership site or a subscription in a box or just anything, to keep the people engaged and mainly have more of them coming in than leaving, right? As long as you have that, you're okay.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Cool. So if people want to reach out to you and they just want to see what you're doing, what you're up to, where can they go?
The place that I hail every single day is we have this Groove Learning Facebook group. So Groove Learning, and I'm in there every single day. We talk business, we talk subscription bots, we talk local services, we talk SaaS. Anything online, we're talking to entrepreneurship. And I hang out there every day. I'm also on Facebook.com, Rohan Jilts, Twitter.com, Rohan Jilts, and I'm also on LinkedIn as well, Rohan Jilts.
Thanks for listening to the Smart Brand Marketing Podcast with Tom, the Digital Architect Lee Bell. For more tips, tricks, and interviews, come visit smartbrandmarketing.com. That's smartbrandmarketing.com. And join the newsletter. It's free.